The following podcast is a part of RadioMisfits.com.
Hey there! Welcome to Misfits Making It. We're oddballs and we're doing cool stuff. I'm your host, Lauren Lojudice. This is the podcast version of the comedy shows I host around New York City and the road, the Misfit Variety Show, and all the shows at the Capiche Club Misfit Comedy Space down in Little Italy. So how's it going? What's up in your Misfit world? I am here on tour. I'm about to do my first show in Chicago tonight to kick off this United States of Misfit Midwest tour loop. So here, go to Caledonia. We're going to do this house party show. Then I'm going to go to Kalamazoo. Yes, that's a place. And Detroit in Indianapolis. And man, it's going to be so fun. If you know anyone in those areas, spread the word. Then in the end of the month, I'll be in Denver. Yeah, I'm bringing the show over to Rise Comedy and also taking part in the Untangling Our Roots conference. It's big month, huge. I've been talking about it a lot, about the preparation, about how much work was involved, just how scared I am, all of it. And now that I'm here, I gotta say, I'm just so happy and grateful to be able to do it, because the difference between doing it and not doing it is basically who does it. It's as simple as that. So many of my friends want a tour, and I feel like I'm here out here kind of scouting for us and like the Jacques Cousteau of my community, going out and diving deep into the world of touring and figuring out how to do it so I can communicate back. And I think people that I talk to about it in my comedy community are like, oh, I would love to, but, and all the obstacles and all the puzzles that you have to solve and the challenges that come with touring. And I'm like, yeah, those are the challenges. Now let's just figure out how to overcome those challenges. And it's just as simple as that. It's just the will to do it. So I'm here and I'm grateful that I'm here, just that I've done it as a success. And this is something that I've actually noticed in talking to people about it, like even normies too. Like, people are surprised that I'm touring, that I, first of all, that it just takes guts to do it. Second of all, like, they think of touring more for someone who is historically famous, someone who's been famous for like 20 years, or someone who's gone viral, like super viral. I've had videos that have gone viral, but someone who has like 2 million followers, which is problematic. This is we cannot just think in our world that those are the only people who can go out on the road and share their work with people. Because first of all, people who were traditionally famous for like 20 years, those are all the usual suspects. And it's usually people, a lot of those people, let's just say they aren't actually doing the right things. They're not exactly the best people. They're not exactly like building their work on and bringing light to others. A lot of them. Some of them, yes, I'm so happy that they're famous. Some of them, no. Okay, so that's problematic in and of itself, not to mention the gatekeepers that were involved, which now have been brought down to some extent by the ability to reach your own audience and go viral. So there's the other coin, the virality. People who have like 2 million followers, not always great comedians, but you know, they get an audience, so they get to go on the road. Their fame is dependent on the algorithm to a large extent. So that means if we think that those are the only people who can go out on the road, those are basically who got through problematic gatekeepers or who have an algorithm that supports them, like that's insane. That's ridiculous. And that is also depending on social media to depict who is worthy of their work being shown. So fuck all that. I'm out here. I'm doing it. It's fun. Come hang out with me. I can't wait to do these shows. It's going to be great. I'm going to be on my Instagram, on the stories, and then in the reels every day doing recaps. So come hang out with me there. So before we go into an interview and some other shout outs, just reminder, please rate and review the podcast, because social proof, super important for Misfits. Misfits trust other Misfits to know what's good. Also, sign up at laurenlogi.com, laurenlogi.com, and you can get monthly updates and recaps, or you could sponsor a podcast. We've made it available for individuals or companies to get involved. So if we put this out every other week-ish. So if we get a sponsor, we could put it out more often. Just go to laurenlogie.com, click on Listen Podcast, and contact us there. So as you know, we've been shouting out other podcast friends, other Misfit podcast friends. And this episode, we'd like to shout out From First Period to Last Period. And this podcast was created because, as you know, while we're on the subject of social media, yeah, lots of stuff out there. Lots of stuff health-wise, you know, stuff that helps, stuff that brings anxiety. There's so much conflicting information and overwhelming amounts of information to sort through when you're trying to figure out health issues. So women are especially exposed to messages every day telling us how to do things, often to sell us things. And so this podcast is your solution, From First Period to Last Period, brought to you by Rescripted. It's dedicated to shining a light on all the women's health topics that have long been considered taboo, from UTIs to painful periods, so you can be your own best health advocate. Yeah, if you're someone who's really concerned about your health, you're Googling late into the night about your symptoms, or you're just spending 5 minutes before your doctor's appointment Googling to figure out what questions to ask, From First Period to Last Period is for you. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. Head to rescripted.com to learn more. All right, you ready for the interview? I'm super excited about this guest. I've known her for quite a bit of time and see her evolve. Her name is Kim A. Caldwell. She is an incredible story. I don't want to ruin it for you, but let me just tell you this. She invented what she does. She literally invented it. It's incredible. Talk about misfits making it. She found an interest. She went with it. She's been intuitively feeling herself around it. I met her through something we mentioned is called B School. That is Marie Forleo's program for online business. We met in a mixer there. And then as life happens, we ended up having a mutual friend who lives in Paris. And I was there doing the Gullier program, the infamous French clown teacher, Annie Tomp. And I was in Paris for a few days visiting this mutual friend who set up a coffee, and there we reconnected, and I was blown away by just her light and what she was doing and how she was legit making it happen. So let's get to the interview with undergarment educator Kim A. Caldwell. Welcome. Hooray, Kim A. Kim A. Caldwell on Misfits Making It. Well, Kimmy, I've known you for so long, meaning like we met a long time ago.
Okay, so we've just been like strangely reconnecting in many different moments along our life.
Right. Yeah. We've kind of like, yeah, it's weird. Kind of been on this like trajectory where it's like parallel, but not, you know, it's like interesting.
So fascinating. Yeah. Okay. Well, great. I'm very excited to be here and also kind of honored to be called a misfit who's making it, because I definitely feel like I did not take a traditional path in my life, and I do feel like I'm making it. So I'm pumped. I'm ready to be here.
And you have the coolest job. Oh, no, many cool jobs in the world. You have a very cool job.
Thanks. I made it up, like, so I feel excited to talk about it.
You fucking created that shit.
Yeah, I did.
Did you know you would be a bra expert?
Oh, sure. I dreamed about it as a young girl. I like couldn't wait to be a bra expert. No, babe. I was going to college, Marymount Manhattan, as you know, in New York City. And I was pretty much financially independent at 18. So like my parents like dropped me off in New York and were like, congratulations, you're on your own. And so I just needed a job. And so I was working in shoes. I would just like walk down to 86th Street because I was living at the 92nd Street Y through school. So I walked down to 86th Street and literally just handed out resumes to random retail places. And one of them was like, sure. And so this was, you know, back in the day in 2003. So I was making $7 an hour selling shoes and like broke. I was so poor. In my sophomore year, I moved out of the dorm, the Y, and ended up in a really bad housing situation that was on 117 between 2nd and 3rd. So if anyone's New York City for a long time, if you live there now, you're like, there's a Target and something else there. This was not there. This was 2004, and it was like not the safest area. And I lived in a 6th floor walk-up that had bed bugs, mice, roaches. We had like someone break in. I had to have the cops take me home one night because a man was following me. Like it was a really, yeah, super unsafe situation, but it's all that I could afford. And I think like I put two and two together and was like, I need to make more money because my part of the rent was $249 a month, $249. And I could barely wow. afford it. Like that is how broke I was. So literally just another, I'll never forget this. I was in a voice and speech class in college on the ground, shaking, vibrating as you do in that class. And a friend of mine said, well, I know a bra shop that's opening up in Soho. Are you interested in bras? I said, I don't care about bras. How much does it pay? And she said, $10 an hour. And I said, I'm going to be rich. Let's go. So I went down there and I got hired on the spot. And because I was a theater person too, you know, we'd always been told, especially as a young woman, don't take your clothes off in an audition, right? Because like, they're just going to tape it and sell it and whatever. So in my interview, she was like, take your top off because she was going to measure me for a bra. And I was like, I was told not to do that. Like, I shouldn't do this. But lo and behold, she was measuring me for a bra. And that was my first introduction to the world of bras. It completely changed my life. Like, truly. And even then, years in that business, I still was like, I'm going to be a musical theater actress. So quickly, I'll tell you that the reason I stayed is because I was, you know, as an actress, everything was about the way I looked. And I did not have a very kind relationship with the way I looked. I was really hard on myself. And I was pretty privileged. You know, I was thin, white presenting. I'm Latina, but very white presenting. And able, healthy, pretty person. And yet I didn't match the perfectly airbrushed images in magazines. Like, who did? And this was before any body positive movements or any, you know, no filter movements on Instagram. This was 2005. So I didn't measure up. And yet it took me just 1 week of working in the bra shop and seeing actual human bodies and being like, oh, and I'm talking about bodies from every single walk of life, including the supermodels on those magazines, but also like moms of four, people after breast cancer, trans folks, larger folks, elderly folks, like every kind of body you can imagine. And I just found them beautiful. And yet every single person in that fitting room had something negative to say in the mirror, like every single one. And I realized what a waste of time. So I started talking kinder to myself. And then I started encouraging people to talk kinder to themselves. So like, bras are cool. I like them. They're lovely. They're really just a tool that I use to do a deeper work. And cool, like in a weird, cool way, they're worn right over the heart. So it's a really rich area to do some like, you know, investigation about how you feel about this part of the body. And if there's any kind of confusion, like what size do I freaking wear? If there's any shame, they're too big, they're too small, they're not enough, they're too much. Or if there's any discomfort, right? Like it's digging in, it's hurting, it's falling off. It just totally blocks off the heart. And I want more people in the world that have shoulders back, heart out, making heart-led decisions in the world. And I knew that at 20 when I started this. I knew, ooh, this is a good way for us to have heart-led people in the world. So it sounds a little bizarre, but actually bras are like my most feminist tool. And if I can change the way that somebody addresses that part of their body every single morning, it's like the ripple effect becomes a billionfold. And again, if that loving and informed decision that that person wants to make is not to wear a bra, I'm all for it, like 100%. But it's like, I want to make sure you know your options, babe. And it's not, I'm not wearing something because I can't find something or no one makes anything for me or I'm just too big or too small to wear something. Like, no, there's absolutely a really beautiful way for us to support and adorn this part of the body. And I'm just here to educate you on your options. So that's why I stayed. But yeah, it wasn't me in the end. Yeah. But yeah, and then I just ended up making a whole business out of it, you know?
So beautiful. I mean, I remember like I was at Spa Castle in Queens.
In Queens, yeah, absolutely. Like, yeah. I've never been there, but I've been to a big onsen like that in Japan. So I'm familiar with the idea. Yeah.
So for people not privy, it's like a huge complex of different pools and hot saunas, and it's lovely. I'm not sure post-COVID how they're doing, but
I know that's a good point. That's a good point.
I remember sitting there and I was like in the section where it was, they do divide it by gender and, right. You know, okay. Lots to say, but that's how they do it.
Sure.
And, people are, you know, pretty naked in that section. And I remember looking like everyone is like the difference between what people think of ideal yeah. and what people are yeah. is like a matter of centimeters, if not millimeters. Yeah. And I was like, we're all kind of the same. We're all like these hairless rats, like walking around, and like having so many opinions about a centimeter.
Yeah.
A body.
Yeah. Not to mention like, every single body is so unique. So like, I don't know a single person, you know, Barbie just came out, right? And so we're talking a lot about like yeah. ideals and body ideals, but like, I don't know anybody, I truly have seen thousands of naked people. And I've never seen anyone that's like this perfect ideal. Like it's just, we're chasing a dream that's not possible. And yet one of the best parts of being human is how unique we are. And we've all just been sold a lie. We get it. Like we've been sold a lie about our worth and our value and our is based on our beauty, and that our beauty has to match a certain standard in order for us to be lovable or attractive or desirable. And it's such a lie. Like it's truly, truly a lie. And yet we still get to appreciate the body that we have and love on it and care for it and support it and adorn it and dress it in beautiful things if we want to, right? Like there's actually this weird freedom once you stop caring that then you actually care more about taking care of it in a loving way. So the focus goes from like, I have to look a certain way to like, how do I want to feel today? That's what I want to help people shift. That's what I do. So, you know, I have this, I've been in this business for 18 years. So it's evolved a lot. I was a shop girl, right? I was like plowing away, working in a shop in Soho, hustling. And I was actually only at that mom and pop shop. I taught with like an old Jewish lady who's like, oh my God, it'd be a great character for you. She's like amazing. Very, very like a character, you know what I mean? And then I went and got hired by Saks Fifth Avenue, which also filled with characters. And as a young actress at the time, I was like, this is great scene study. Like these people, this character study, amazing. Like these people are yeah. wild. But I was at the flagship store on Fifth Ave. And then I was really quickly recruited by La Perla, which is a very fancy, like $300 bras company based in Italy. And all it's so strange, like the clientele really shifted throughout all of those. And yet every single person, no matter how much money you make, still had these stories about their body. It was bizarre. I was like, wow, it was such a lesson. And I really wish that every young person could just be a bra fitter for a week because your eyes would really be opened. And you know what? I think this like newer generation has maybe a little bit of a different view on bodies than we did and definitely than like our parents and our grandparents did. But I needed that. I needed that wake up call to like stop treating myself a certain way. I didn't wear shorts for 7 years of my life when I was younger because I was so embarrassed about stretch marks that I had since I was 10 years old and went through a growth spurt. Or cellulite that I had, right? Wow. Like I have long, beautiful legs and I was hiding them because I was so ashamed. So that was my first step. I actually started wearing shorts for the first time. I'm really pale if y'all can't see me. Even though I'm half Puerto Rican, I'm the super pale kind. And I thought that I was like blinding people with my thighs. I was like, oh my God, they're going to see this like bright light coming towards them. And was really embarrassed. But it started with shorts. Then Instagram became a thing and blogging became a thing. And I just remember like sharing with people this journey that I was on. And I felt like I was talking the talk, but I wasn't necessarily walking the walk enough for me. And I want to be careful in saying this because I do not think you need to prove you love your body by like posting you in less clothing. 100% not the only way to love your body, for sure. For me personally, that was a big step for me. I grew up in a really modest household. My dad was a pastor. My mom was the church secretary. So yes. Wow. And I still actually have a strong faith to this day. And purity culture was like a big deal in our house. And I wasn't even allowed to show my midriff. So if you know me now, if you go look at my Instagram now, you're like, what? Because I went from not showing my legs or my midriff to wearing shorts for the first time to then my very first ever like campaign that I did with the brand is I called up a really big company, Bare Necessities, which is like a big online shopping place for bras. Yeah. And I was like, would you pay me to put on bathing suits and talk about it? And they were like, yes. And so I did. I started with bathing suits and like pretty like covered bathing suits. And then eventually, was like, okay, well, let me do this with undergarments and did undergarments. And I look back at those pictures and I just see a person who was on the way, who is still so nervous about showing their body and wanting it to look a certain way. And now I'm like 45 pounds fuller. I'm 38. I'm not 20 something. I'm a size, you know, I was like a size 2 then. I'm like a size 10, 12 now. And now when I do photo shoots all over the world, absolutely no airbrushing on my body. And it's just my own experience with my body.
Which is amazing. But, and by the way, and so refreshing. It is why, one of the reasons, like, I'm not necessarily like, bras wouldn't be my topic of choice. But I just love, but I love, you're inspiring, and also you're showing your body, and it is clear there's no airbrushing, which makes it even clearer how much everything else is being airbrushed.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks. And you know what? That's a commitment. I didn't know where this was going to go. You know, like now I'm stuck in it and it feels good. It feels easier, honestly, when I'm choosing pictures to share on behalf of a brand now, which is like the number one way that I make money, right? I used to really worry about, ooh, what angle is going to make my stomach look better? What's going to, you know, that my thighs are showing my cellulite there, my stretch marks. I truly don't care. I'm like, what's the best picture for the product? And in fact, sometimes I purposefully choose the one where I have rolls or I have things showing, because that's what bodies look like. And I wish when I was 18 or 15 or whatever, I saw that on humans, because I'm a healthy, able, sophisticated, successful, gorgeous woman who has rolls on her body. Like, okay, doesn't change any of the other things that I just said. I'm loved. I'm like, you know, in love. Like I feel it doesn't change anything. So it's taken a long time for me to get there too. So I don't want to just like scream to people who are listening, like, love yourself, because that doesn't work either. I had to undo a lot of the shame and a lot of the stories and a lot of the bullshit that I was carrying around. And again, bras just happens to be my favorite tool to do it, but it's not the only one. That's for sure. Like, I've definitely done other work besides just like putting on a good bra, but it sure helps. It's definitely good way to... Yeah. Well, so now to be clear about making it, you know, I have a media and marketing company, which, by the way, when we were in college, I remember saying to myself, I'm never going to have a boring job like marketing. Now I have a marketing and media company that promotes brands that are, you know, sharing products that I think support my values and like the hooray that I want to see in everybody. So it's called Hooray Kimmy because I created that name in college. I did not think that was going to stick. I didn't even think Kimmy would stick. That was just a nickname people had for me. And here I am 100 years later and still being called that. And it's honestly so unintentional yet so specific now. Like, people literally to this day are like, your branding's so good. And I just remember Hooray Kimmy, and they know what I'm about. I even asked ChatGPT the other day, like, who's Kimmy Caldwell? And the bio that they wrote was so spot on. And I was so honored that the number one thing that they talked about in it was something about, like, you know, body confidence and advocacy and supporting people to say hooray. Like, it just was a really spot. I was like, yes, this is exactly what I'm about. So I felt really fortunate that wow. is kind of what I'm known for now on the interwebs and on TV and in press. So
yeah,
great.
It's interesting. That's a new thing. Instead of Googling yourself, ChatGPT yourself.
Right? Do it, y'all. You'll be surprised. And you know, I have a very unique name and I'm linked by like a billion press outlets. So I'm all over the internet, but it's really fun to do it and like see what comes up.
I love it. And what I think, you know, I was looking at your website and you have several courses about bra fitting for both retail outlets and also just for consumers. And
I'm
like I just try to buy anything without an underwire, and I don't have enough bras anyway. I have to work on that. But like, I'm always like using the same ones until they're like threadbare. I have work to do, Kimmy. But
I'm here to help.
I also don't have like a lot to support. So sure. I understand that if you have, it made me more empathetic. I was like, for women who have more of a situation they need to handle, like this is a really big deal.
So number one, I fit bras from double A, even triple A, which is smaller than an A, up to N cup or O cup. They exist. And that person absolutely needs more support, right? And like, it's sort of, again, like I consider myself quite feminist, and I love the like bra free movement, even though I'm working bras, because it's a powerful statement to make. And yet there are hundreds of thousands of millions of people who are like, you know, that's not comfortable for me. And I don't, I also like want to take a moment here to say like our culture still has ideas about breasts that we, in order for us to feel safe and accepted, there are certain things we might want to do with our bodies, right? And one of them is like, if we let our natural breast shape or a nipple show in the United States, it's scandalous. It's so scandalous. And like, you won't be able to have certain jobs. Like, it's wild and stupid and I hate it. And yet that is, we're still living in that culture. So like, I want to help that person be able to feel safe and accepted in a good way. But also, it's not comfortable to go bra free for a lot of people. The skin on skin contact doesn't feel good. Pain is real. Gravity is a whole situation. So making sure that that person feels comfortable is like my number one key. But I also want to say, like, I just put something on my Instagram to like a poll about basically, is it harder out there for people with bigger boobs? And like the short answer for most people is like, yes, there's a lot more to consider clothing wise, bra wise, comfort wise, whatever. But also, I truly feel no matter your size, this part of the body really does still deserve love and support and adornment. And again, if that means I'm chill and I don't want to wear, or you seem very bra casual to me. Like that's awesome, right? Like you can absolutely do that. But I also always want to make sure it's not a default of, well, I have nothing to worry about there. So like, I'm just going to ignore this part of the body, or I've never really found anything to fit me and I don't feel like I need anything. So I'm just going to not. Whereas you can be so intentional, and I'm saying you, but this is for anybody, intentional about, how do I want to feel here? What shape do I want to have? What color or material do I want to put apart this really sacred part of my body right over my heart? Like, there is room for you to still love and support this part of the body. And whether you have fuller breasts or smaller breasts, a bra that doesn't fit is still going to feel horrible. So like you still have to get into the right size. It's kind of like shoes. Like whether you wear a size 5 or a size 11, like we think of a woman with a size 11, we're like, wow, she has so many less options. It must be so difficult, yada, yada. Like, sure, we got to focus on that person. But even like the size 7 person, if you're wearing an 8 or you're wearing a 6 when you should be wearing a 7, it ain't gonna feel good. And you could buy the best shoe in the world, and if it doesn't fit well, it's not gonna feel good. It's not gonna give you the support that you're looking for and the comfort that you need all day long. So
I was taught by nuns and they had this, I remember one of them, I would just like stare at her because she had like this ill fitting bra where like it looked like the underwire was like coming up on her boobs.
Yeah.
And it was like, ah! I remember just, she always had this weird, for a nun, kind of like a sheer shirt. And I just,
okay, girl. Yeah, it's painful to see for me sometimes when I walk around and see people in bras that don't fit. I'm like, ooh, our life could be so much better. But you know what? It's also like people who have like, this is going to be a weird analogy, so flow with me here. But like people who maybe have been dealing with like slight IBS their whole life and like they eat foods that like don't feel good, but they're like, whatever. And they just don't realize. And then maybe you go, I don't know, on some kind of elimination diet or something. And then you're like, oh, it's possible to feel this way. Like, you don't have to have a stomach ache every day. Like, I didn't know. That's how it is with bras. I think people honestly just become in the habit of discomfort and it feels too daunting, overwhelming. They dread bra shopping, so they don't. And they've never worked with a professional, and maybe especially a professional that has compassion in the fitting room and it's going to help them through more than just the bra. And they just didn't know that life could be comfortable. They didn't know that life could be supported and feel good, and you could feel sexy and empowered by this thing that maybe has caused you so much discomfort your whole life and or has been seen as a tool of the patriarchy, right? Like, why would you think this could be a tool for my liberation and my empowerment? You wouldn't. So just even like, if anyone gets anything from this, look into it. See if maybe going to a professional fitter or going through my course or just browsing my free info helps you change and shift that a little bit. And maybe this could be a tool for your empowerment and your support.
So when you're in the fitting room, when you're in the fitting room with everyone and you're seeing these, you know, how you want to, you change your relationship to your body. You started to falling in love with understanding like how deep this goes. When did you take the step to start developing your own brand around this? And did you know, like, this is what you were going to, like, how did that, you know, launch?
This was a college job. I literally was just trying to feed myself and not eat off the Wendy's dollar menu every day. Like, that was truly it, right? So No, I did not know I was going to turn this into a brand. I still had high aspirations to be on Broadway in movies. Like that was my whole jam. So actually I was working for La Perla and I remember I was making really good money. I actually almost dropped out of college because I was like clear. I was working full time and going to school full time and like trying to date. I was like, I don't have time for this. Like there's just too much going on in my life. So I remember calling up my mom and telling her I was going to quit school and she wasn't paying for it. So I sort of was like, I get to make this decision. And she sort of was like, okay. And then like, basically after a break, I was like, okay, I can actually go back to school, but basically only if I could graduate early. And I say this because I think, again, to me, bras were not it. They were not the goal. So I sort of felt like I really wanted to finish and do like senior showcase and whatever. I basically audited it as a class and really wanted to give acting a go still. So in that time, my boss at La Perla, the CEO, like offered me like an account exec position as a salesperson. Like that could have been my path. And I remember turning her down. I know her to this day. And she still is like, how's that Broadway career going? Cause I was like, I'm sorry, I'm going to be an actress. I can't work here full time. And I ended up going and working in clothing for just like a year just to like make some bank. And it was right during the 2008 recession. And I was miserable and I didn't realize that how much I loved bras. They were such a sharp tool for me to help somebody say hooray, to see their beauty, to help them feel comfortable, to empower them. I just didn't know that I couldn't do that with clothing. And so they started letting people go left and right and I got let go and I was upset for about 3 days and then was like, thank God, because I was so miserable there. And then I did some like creative stuff. Actually, I had an agent who we were just talking about and I did some like commercial work and I did some like craft stuff on Etsy. Like I was just all over the place. And then that mom and pop shop called me back. So I went back. They now had an online store. I was doing customer service. Then I became their marketing manager, their store manager, their marketing director. Maybe not in that order. I did not know marketing was available to me because, again, I thought this was a boring job. But I loved talking to people about bras. I knew our customers so well. I could finish their sentence. I knew how to speak to them and serve them and support them. So it just kind of became natural that I was doing our content marketing especially. That was my favorite. So blog posts, this was when social media became a big thing. I just loved it. I loved creating our newsletters. Like I loved doing video. So I was creating and producing all these educational videos for this company. And I just loved it. And I thought like, what is this happening? And they started, well, whatever, that's the whole drama thing about them. But I basically started my own thing in 2014 because they couldn't sustain the business anymore. And I went back to fitting in the shop, which I didn't want to do. And I told them like, I'm going to start my own thing. And that was actually their suggestion. Like you should go do this thing. And I remember I had been on Tim Gunn's Guide to Style and the Martha Stewart Show for La Perla back in 2007 when I was 22, like still in college. And I'll never forget that 7 years later, it's 2014, and one of the producers walks into that bra shop. And I remembered her. We're like friends on LinkedIn. So I like was like, hey, were you? And she was like, yeah. And then she's like, what are you doing here? And I told her, and I said, actually, I'm thinking of starting my own thing and going out and just having a hard time with the scheduling here. And she looked at me right in the eyes. Lauren, and was like, go do it. And I was like, what? She's like, listen, you're a great bra fitter and I would love for you to stay here and just do this, but like you're never going to take yourself seriously. Your clients won't take you seriously until you just jump in and do it. And I was like, okay. And I'm not kidding. Maybe like a couple days later, I told my boss, like, listen, I can't do this anymore. And it was such an unceremoniously weird exit. And she was like, okay, bye. And I like turned to my husband and I was like called him. I was like, I think I just quit my job. And he was like, okay. And he had been looking for a new job. So he's like, well, I guess I'm keeping mine. I was like, yes, please. And then 1 week later to the day, he got let go from his job. And then 2 weeks later, on our second year wedding anniversary, I lost like my only client that I had. And we both looked at each other and were like, okay, so we are very capable people. We can go work for other people and or we can kind of do what we want to do right now. Like we didn't have kids. We didn't have a mortgage. We were living in New York City really cheaply, actually. So we just decided to go for it. So he went back to school for broadcasting and I started my business. I like formed an LLC a couple months later and just made it work. And it was all behind the scenes stuff at first. It was like, I made my own little business cards by hand, printed them out, cut them up, and walked around this expo called Curve, which is like a big lingerie expo. And I was there helping that former CEO of La Perla. She like was like, I need a salesperson to come like help with the show. are you available? I was like, I don't know anything about this line. She's like, you'll do fine. And she was right. I was like literally like selling things I didn't even know about. I was like, and this underwear is available in a size extra small and large. Okay. Like I didn't know anything. Wow. And just made it up and literally walked from booth to booth being like, do you need social media marketing help? Do you need social media help? Do you need social media help? And just literally handed it out. Like I handed out those resumes on 86th Street and got a bunch of random clients, made really good money. Then realized one day, I don't actually like being behind the scenes. I don't want to wake up and write somebody else's tweet or X, whatever it is anymore. And I don't know if you know this about me, but I'm a in front of the camera type of person.
Yeah, something like that.
I don't know if you can tell. So I just kept trying to be like true to me and what I like to do. And that was when I just kept blogging and started pitching brands. Side note, that expo, so that was 2014. That expo now... I say this with no ego. This is just facts. I walk through that expo now and I'm not kidding. People stop me and ask if they can take pictures with me. Like wow. I went from being a little nobody with her little made up business cards who just was like, I don't even know what I'm doing in this world to people. Now I'm like a celebrity in that industry and I host panels and workshops and work with some of the biggest brands on that floor and some of the coolest indie brands that are there. And I'm literally hosting conversations about shifting the industry when it comes to men's lingerie and inclusivity and sizing and skin tone and sustainability and marketing that's outside the box. Like what if you had told me that 9 years later, not even less than that, that I would be like a celeb on that floor. I would have been like, you're crazy. And here I am. So that's the short version.
So when you started, you were pitching brands. Is that you said that's how you started your?
Yeah. I mean, I was doing behind the scenes marketing. So like helping with brand voice and creating and crafting social media content and blog posts and stuff like that. So I just was going up and pitching brands and being like, do you need help? And then sending them random proposals. But now, truly, like the number one way that I make money is pitching brands to work with them on wearing and sharing their product. So custom content that's on my platform. So it's both the production of it and the promotion, and then also the licensing. So these are all things I had to learn. I did not go to school for marketing. I had to just teach myself this and then like hire people to help. And so the number one way that I make money now is partnering with brands to wear and share their products and hopefully a very authentic way, no airbrushing. And I literally just pick places in the world I want to go to, like Paris, which I've been to now 10 times, or Mexico or Guatemala or Puerto Rico or you name it, London. And then I just like tell brands like, hi, I'm doing a photo shoot in this glorious place and I have X amount of spots and I'd love to work with you to promote some of your content or share your brand with my people. And do you want to pay me? And they're like, yes. So that's how that works. But then I also do a lot of consulting on the back end. I host, like I said, workshops and panels within the industry. I have a bra course for consumers, which is really just to give people the basics. And it's kind of a sandwich of like practical information and then a lot of mindset and encouragement. And then I also just launched a bra fitting training for bra fitters, like boutique owners and people. Actually, I have some designers in there too, who want to learn not only how to fit people for bras, but how to create a compassionate and empathetic space so they can bring people in a way that's like, I don't know, just more ethical, to be really honest. So instead of like bossing people around and being like, get in the wrong bra size, to really be like, great, how can we support you today? You know, how can we serve and support you today? And then I do like fun TV projects and it's just things here, hodgepodge, truly hodgepodge of things here and there. I wish I had one revenue stream or two revenue streams. That would be amazing and really simple for my brain, but that's just not how my brain works and how my business works. So we have several revenue streams.
Right. I mean, the media industry is constantly changing. My friend who does something like similar, but a little bit different than you, very different industry, very different corner of it. But she's just like I wish it would just stay the same, but every 15 minutes I have to reinvent how I'm making money.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, again, like two years ago, I wasn't on TikTok and now that's like my number one platform.
Yeah.
You know, a bunch of years ago, I wasn't doing reels and videos. It was all just images. So it's like, you know, for someone like me, actually, it's quite cool because I like to pivot. I like to have different things and do new things. I get bored quite easily. That's the ADHD in me.
Yep.
And at the same time, it's a bit chaotic. It can be like a lot. So now that I have a team and I have people working with me, creating the systems for each time we pivot is like a lot of work. And getting everybody on board to make sure that their piece of that puzzle works is a lot. But I couldn't do it alone. I mean, I'm very, very open about how I built this from scratch myself and was doing a lot myself for a very long time. And now I don't, because it's not sustainable for me to do this on my own.
How many years were you?
How many years was I on my own?
Doing it alone, yeah.
I would say, let's see. So I've been in business now for 9 years. I would say for probably the first four or five years, I was completely alone. Then I hired, like, I went through a couple of like assistants or interns that like I didn't know how to manage someone, yeah. And I had no systems in place. So like I went through a couple of people like that. And then I had an assistant who actually also went to our college. Oh my gosh, Marymount's getting a shout out today. She was actually one of my friends, and she had come back from a gig, a theater gig, and she was looking for another job. And I said, would you work for me? And we had a really strong conversation about when we'd be wearing a friend hat and when we would be wearing a business hat together. And we set really clear boundaries. She was with me for 5 years. So maybe it was, maybe I started earlier. Maybe it was like 3 years in, I was by myself, maybe 3 or 4 years. And she was amazing. But I also, we outgrew her. You know, that wasn't her end goal, wasn't to be an assistant in a media company. And so she wasn't necessarily learning all the new things and whatever. And it was time for her to move on anyway. So she moved on. Then I had somebody else who was great. And she also was like, I'm closing down my VA business. It's hard work. So now I have an online business manager, a content manager specifically just for the content, and then like a VA who helps with some of the more like admin stuff.
Yeah.
So those are the three people. And they're very, very part-time, but still not alone. And then I also have like a bookkeeper and a CPA, because I hate doing the money stuff. And I realized if I wanted to actually make money, I needed to like get wiser with that. So I have a lot of support around me. I definitely believe support in more than one way is really, really important.
That's so, yeah. And what's a piece of, we call it misfit inspiration, if I may.
Oh, love it.
I love
hooray.
That. Hooray. What's a piece of like, because as you go through these pivots and these changes, you know, and then you're like, have people, and then, you know, maybe you have to outgrow them or shift everything.
Yeah.
What is some inspiration? It's hard. What is the like inspiration you bring to yourself to like keep you going? It could be like book, quote,
I have so many. Anything. I have so many. I mean, the number one thing what you talked about growing is like to have a growth mindset, right? Because growth, there's like a whole book on this actually called Mindset by Martha Beck. And I haven't actually read all of it, to be fair, but the fixed mindset is like, this is how it is and it can't change. Whereas growth mindset is I'm open to change, but also like really includes you being comfortable with being uncomfortable. Like growth is, I remember asking, I hired a coach who I loved. And I remember asking her, can growth ever just feel easy and comfortable? And she said, no. She's like, the nature of growth is uncomfortable. And I was like, and she's right, you know? And I don't think that means it has to be horrible, but it will be uncomfortable. So like really getting comfortable with the discomfort of growth is really important. The other is I have four things that I have next to me on my desk at all times. And I had a coaching program when I was coaching people. And these were the four pillars that I always worked on with people. So number one is your values, which sounds like, oh yeah, of course know your values. But I mean like actually really know them and be really honest with yourself if you're actually living those out. Not just, I want to be a person who values whatever, but like look at your actions. Are these really things that you really believe in and are making all of your decisions from? That's really important. So mine, for example, are authenticity, joy, connection, creativity, courage, and harmony, always. Then there's like the I am statement, which means these are who I am no matter what, whether the client says yes or no, whether I book that TV spot or not, whether this is this launch is a success or not, no matter what, whether the guy says yes or not, right? Whether my partner, you know, says yes or not, these are who I am no matter what. These do not change. And so for me, I know that I'm divinely created, I'm guided, I'm supported, I'm loved, I'm safe, I'm wise, I'm connected, I'm growing, I'm perfectly imperfect, I'm human, I'm capable, I'm supplied, and I'm taken care of. No matter what. Okay, that's that. Then this one's too long, I won't read it, but then I have my faith statement. So you can believe in whatever you believe in, but there is something firm that you need to stand on in order to know what is true. So for me personally, I have a really strong faith. And so there are things that I know about how I was made, who I'm supposed to be, who I was designed to be, how loved and created with care I was, that I just know are true and that I'm like part of a plan. So mine's long, but like this was like a Gabby Bernstein thing. Like writing this out was a big deal for me because I kind of knew it, but like reminding myself of that was really important. And then my why. I use my why on a daily basis. And for a long time, I thought my why had to do with bras because I loved helping people with bras so much. But I went to a fireside chat with Simon Sinek, who is the creator of this idea of why in a big way. Mm-hmm. Maybe not the creator, but the popularized it. And he had this first book, which was Start With Why, which is sort of the case for starting with why. And then the second book was How to Find Your Why. And a girl asked a question I was too afraid to ask in front of me. She asked exactly what was on my mind. And she said, well, I know my why, but I don't really know my how. Like, how do I get this done? And the co-author that was up there with him asked, well, what is your why? And so she said, I help busy hospitality workers find a better work-life balance. He said, okay, there's already a lot of how in your why. He said, your why is so much broader. It can apply to any aspect of your life. And it's like the reason that your friends love you and that your family loves you. He's like, would your friends love you because you help create a better work-life balance for busy hospitality workers? And she was like, no, my friends like me because I'm fucking funny. And he was like, great, that's much closer to your why. And it was like this light bulb moment for me. Yeah. So my why is I support people to uncover pathways of love within themselves and with each other so that we can have a more harmonious world. That's it. So I could do that as a bra fitter. I could do that as a teacher. I can do that as a wife, as a sister, maybe one day as a mom. Like, I can do that in any capacity, and the how can shift. So that really freed me up to pivot and to change and to mold it. And, you know, a lot of people think that I actually fit people for bras, and I don't anymore. I actually don't. I have so many other ways of serving and supporting that why, that still deal with bras, but are not actually that specific how. And it was a true freedom. So that would be my suggestion.
I love that. I love that. Now, I have a question from someone you worked with at La Perla, Martha Stewart's here.
Martha, so good to see you.
Hello, Kameh. I'm taking time from, you know, harvesting some of the new parsley patch in my East Hampton estate and running a media.
Delicious.
Yeah. So, listen, at my company, I'm interested to know how you delegate. At my company, I often look at my employees and think, I could do this shit better myself. So how do you have the presence of mind to delegate? And how do you not?
Yeah,
how do
great
you
question.
Saying, keep your hands off that fucking pepper because you don't know how to fucking cut it right. How do you avoid doing that?
First of all, Martha, it's so good to see you again. And I remember being in your office, not your specific office, but in your building. And I remember some of the core values from your building being on there. And I remember working with your team on the show, and they were like a well-oiled machine. So number one, just like you have with that show, is to have really great processes and documentation in place, because I tried to be cool and be like, whatever, and just keep it all in my head. And that doesn't work. Like, everybody has to be on the same page. And so documenting processes weirdly feels like you're going to be like dictating what everybody does, but actually it gives people the freedom to do what they need to do because no one's guessing. It's like really nice. And then you have, it's like, I'm a Capricorn, so I love to have structure with freedom. So people always think of Capricorns as the goat only, and that they're like always trudging ahead and creating a plan, but they forget the back of the Capricorn is actually a fishtail and it has that freedom. So once you create that outline, then you have freedom. So that's number one. Number two, I am still learning how to set expectations because mine are freaking high. And when people don't meet them, I really do absolutely think I could do this better. However, I get really clear on what it is I A, love to do, and B, what is really my zone of genius. Again, not my term, but that's like where like nobody else can do that part. Like, I'm the only person who can go to Paris and take the pictures, right? Like, I'm the only person who can really write about this unique, cool feature on this bra and present it in a way that's really awesome on camera. But like, I don't need to be creating the content calendar or like even writing the contract. I was still doing that this year, my 9th year in business. I was writing all of our contracts and invoices, and I finally hired someone to do it. I was so afraid because it's so legal. I was like, oh my God, what if someone messes it up? But actually she does a great job. And finally,
that'll happen as house arrest. I could tell you.
You're right. Exactly. I mean, I don't know. Martha went to jail, but anyway. So
I've served more days than Snoop, but that's what I tell
you. Have, and look at you. You're better for it. I really feel like it changed you in a positive way. It was good rehabilitation for you, actually. But then the final thing I'll say is that I got great advice from someone who was like, you know, you have to sometimes treat your employees in a loving way. I mean this like beginners, because if you think of like a toddler who's learning to tie their shoe, it's so frustrating. You're like, just freaking tie your shoe. Like, why? This is the simplest thing. And like, you'll be in a rush one day and be like, we got to go. Let's go. Like, toddler, come on. And you will be tempted to be like, you know what? I'll just do it. Just move your hands. They're sticky anyway. Let me just tie your shoe for you. But then they will never learn, and you will constantly be doing the tying of the shoes for them. So I try very hard to treat my team members like beginners, and trust that the more I lovingly show them and give them space and breathe with them as they learn to do things, that then they will become expert shoe tiers and will not even have to think about it, and we get to move on. But it takes time. It just takes a lot of time. So it's hard. I'm not going to lie. It's really hard, but it is definitely worth it.
All right. Well, thank you. And I'm going to go now. I'm going to go bra shopping. I'm inspired. I'm going to go find a nice lacy thing that'll help me get really hammered down into my juicy, saucy bits.
I love it. And please keep doing those beautiful photo shoots. You look amazing, babe.
I know. Thank you, Kimmy. I love her.
I love her too.
All right, Kimmy, where can people come find you?
Please come find me. So I'm at Hooray Kimmay everywhere. So it's HURRAYKIMMAY. No double O's. I'm a theater student. So I spelled Hooray, HURRAY, because that's the way the Shakespeare did it. He did Hooray, Hurrah, Huzzah with an HU. So that's how I spell it. So HooraySkimmay.com, at Hooray Kimmay. I'm really one of those people on a podcast that's like, come say hi to me. Come like say you heard me on the show and you want to chat. Come drop me a DM. I'd love to see you over on Instagram, which is where I hang out mostly. Or just go to that website and sign up for some free stuff. I've got free bra courses in addition to the paid one. So you're covered. You're supported. We got you.
Cool. Well, thank you for coming on. So fun. And I'll see you soon around Philly.
Hooray.
Hooray.
Well, there you have it. You can follow the podcast on my page at Lauren Logi. Updates and inside info on my email list, LaurenLogi.com. Thank you to Annie McCutcheon for editing, Edward Silla at Radio Misfits Podcast Network, and Maddie McLennan for making the podcast art. Thanks to our listeners for bringing us back for another season. We'll see you soon.
The proceeding was a presentation of the Radio Misfits Podcast Network. Find our other great shows on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and at RadioMisfits.com.